All right, welcome back to the Mid-Range Podcast. It's week two of college basketball in the books. The second weekend is complete. I'm here with my good friend and co-host Nick Geramonte.
We're back.
Nick, how you doing?
Let's go. Doing amazing. We're back. Feast week is almost here. Here we are.
Yeah.
Another great week
here
in the books.
Here we are. Another here we good are one for sure. Here we yeah. are.
I'm fired up.
I'm fired up as well. I will say it's been a fun first couple weeks of college ball.
Very.
There's definitely been a lot of excitement. I was telling Bryce on Thursday's episode. I don't mind that it's not five ranked games every night. I like having one game to focus on most nights. One or two that are interesting and kind of getting to learn about all these teams before Feast Week begins.
Yeah, but
let's just get into it, Nick.
As a sport, we do need more ranked games to start the year, I think. Just to start off with more of a bang. Because, nobody cares about college basketball right now when there's football on and you know, there's a little bit of NBA in there and NHL. College basketball just gets swept under the rug, and the only way to have some attention with the sport is to be able to have way more ranked matchups, which I agree with you, from people who actually watch college basketball, I personally don't mind it, but to be able to grow the sport and kind of get more eyes on it, I think it would be smart to have more of that stuff early on. And we used to have the Champions Classic, which is coming up today as we record this, to start the season. I don't know why we moved that.
Yeah.
So just throwing my two cents out there.
The Champions Classic. Yeah. No, that's fair, Nick. I guess I just, in my head, it's all right, you give the first couple weeks so we can, you know, guys like us that will actually watch college basketball can sit around and create our opinions about these teams so that once other people start watching on Feast Week or once football ends, you know, you're a little ahead of the ahead of the curve. I guess I kind of like being a little ahead of it, but that is true. If they want to blow
most
it
people
up,
don't watch till after the Super Bowl.
Realistically, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, most people don't watch until March Madness. But
yeah, Champ Week and March Madness, exactly. So,
yeah.
If you want to try to drive some more people in, you can't expect them to watch, you know, all these bye games early on in the year.
Yeah, it is excessive. I mean, Ohio State had four of them. The Ohio State's scheduled before they get into conference play is absurdly easy. But, we'll get more on Ohio State later. Yeah, you're probably right. But let's talk about a game that was a top 10 matchup with Purdue. Braden Smith, Matt Painter, TKR go down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, take on the Crimson Tide, who beat St. John's a week ago, and they take down Alabama in Alabama. I think the story of the game was TKR and Braden Smith just being insanely good. Braden Smith with 29 points, five threes in the game. Trakoff Monren, 19 points, 15 rebounds, 5 assists. He shot absurdly efficient. Let me see if I can get that here. 9 of 16 from the field. There was some stat that it was the first time someone had had, 19, 15, and 5 against a top 10 opponent away since Tim Duncan or something crazy like that. I mean, those guys showed you that Purdue's top end talent is legit. What did you think about Purdue headed down to Alabama last Thursday, Nick?
Yeah, I'm all in on Purdue. There was a little thing at the start of the year where they struggled a little bit more than they probably should have, and people kind of jumped the gun on that, but it just goes to show that TKR's, an All-American, and getting that guy back helps a lot.
It's unreal.
There's no real weaknesses with the team outside of maybe depth. If something happens to one of these players injury-wise, they may not be able to recover from that, but if they're healthy, they should be the number one team in the nation. Brayden Smith is the best player in the nation. TKR is one of the best fours, and
yeah.
Clough has really kind of found a stride in that fit there. And obviously, Lawyer is a very consistent
superstar role
player who can have the ability to put up 30 points any night. One of the best shooters in the country. So this Purdue team isn't even that great this year. Like, they could be historically great. I think they have the opportunity to have the highest offensive rating in the KenPom era, which is unbelievable. I think Duke set it last year, and I think before that it was 2015 Wisconsin. Like, they're right up there where you look at all these, again, the guys I just named, CJ Cox and more. Like, it's pretty unbelievable the talent of this crew. And I don't even take down Bama a little really at all, because Purdue is just that good.
Yeah, I think I was tweeting about this at the time, and I was even watching the game. I'm a self-proclaimed Purdue hater, obviously. I think that's common knowledge on this at this point. I don't like Purdue. I don't like to root for Purdue, and watching Purdue and rooting against Brayden Smith especially might be the most futile, infuriating thing. Like, you're just watching the guy come up the court, make the right decision every single time. It's absurd how smart he is and how well he plays the game. I mean, he really is, like, he doesn't make any mistakes. Like, he just comes up the court, does the exact right thing, takes the right shot. You don't know if it's going to go in necessarily, but he's going to get there. I mean, he's insane. I think the only question mark for Alabama, and I know you're a guy who loves this guy, but Filon, 5 of 14, he finishes with 11 points and 7 assists, 4 turnovers. I think 5 of 14, those last 4 buckets probably came close to the end of the game, because I believe he was, what, 1 for 10 at one point?
12, I think.
Nick, what do you think here with Filon? I know he's your guy. You have him All-American stature. Is this something that you're worried about for him, or you think just an off game on a big night?
Yeah, it's early on in the season, and he's in a new role. He's in the Mark Sears role, and he had a great game.
I thought he was getting open shots, too.
Yeah, just eye test-wise, he's a bucket, and he's an NBA player. It's one of those things where, you just have off nights sometimes. And but continuing the play from Holloway, where he's kind of taking that next step, and it's good to see that. Again, like, Purdue's the number one team in the nation for a reason. And I'm not really going to sell any stock on Bama. Like, I'm not thinking Bama's, top five team, but I'm still going to hold stock on Filon being an All-American and Player of the Year contender, and Bama being, probably top five seed in the NCAA tournament.
Definitely. And, it's tough to go into an away crowd in the state of Alabama and win a game, take control in a game like this, as we saw with another top team going down to Alabama and playing Alabama's rival. We'll get to that later. Alabama, this is going to be a tough game for Alabama, just in the fact, like, they're going to want to play fast and they're going to want to go offense, and Purdue's going to be the best in the country at that game. So if you're trying to run and you're trying to outrun Purdue, or you're trying to outplay Purdue on the offensive side of the ball, I say good luck, because they are really incredible offensively. And, like, I don't know. I still do have questions with their defense. I don't think it's looked good through the first 4 games here. I don't think it looked great against Alabama. But, like, man, Brayden Smith is the best player in the country, and Trey Kaufman-Wren might be a top 5, top 10 player in the country right along with him. And just all these role guys surrounding them. Purdue has, like, validated the fact that they are top 2, top 3, if not the best team in the country. And definitely, and we can talk a little about some other teams in the conference, but I think Purdue is unquestionably the cream of the crop. And I think people are probably including me, we're a little too quick to write them off after what they beat Oakland by 10 instead of 40 or whatever. I don't know.
And again, without like you mentioned, a top five, top 10 player in the nation. But yeah, they got him back. And he's
all right, Nick, let's move on to a game that I was very personally invested in. I was very excited about, and I came away a little disappointed with a squad I had high hopes for this season. Michigan TCU. You got Michigan coming down to Fort Worth for a power conference game. Michigan, Lendenberg, 14 points, 10 boards, 4 assists, 3 blocks. The Michigan defense was definitely hounding, but, you know, as good as that defense was, Michigan turns the ball over 22 times in this game. TCU might have been just as ferocious on the defensive end of this ball. I mean, this was not a pretty game. Nick, I know you were in the building. What did you see? What did you see from Michigan? What did you see from TCU? What did this game tell you?
Yeah, it's such a funny matchup because TCU is already very undersized coming into the year, and then obviously we talked about it. They lose their starting center for the season, so that just makes it even more difficult. So you're playing, you know, a 6'9" JUCO guy at the five, and your backup's a guy who really hasn't played big time ball, and then you look on the opposing side, it's Michigan, and it's every big, like, that's all they have is really big. So it's just this insanely different matchup, and you saw it with the rebounding numbers. TCU got out rebounded by 21. Yeah. It's one of the worst in recent history for the Frogs. So, but their game plan was honestly really good for what they wanted to do. Like, Dixon obviously had a plan coming in where he was going to force these bigs of Yaxel and Morez and Mara, if they get in the short corner, you double that and kind of force them to make skip passes and then kind of force their guards to make plays. And that's the weakness of the Michigan team is that they don't have a point guard. Or I guess Elliot Cadeau is one, but he was off this game and he's really been inconsistent for the majority of his college career. So it's scary for sure. For the Michigan side, but this was just talent won out. Like, TCU probably should have won this game if they just made a few more shots.
I mean, yeah.
They even had a look late in the game with Toulson baseline that he probably should have made. Again, there's no moral victories, but Michigan's a much, much more talented team than TCU. And I think when you have a loss to New Orleans at home in a bye game to start the season, you could really start to crumble. And to me, this showed just how together this team still is, and the fight was off the charts, and the environment was awesome. So I'm going to take that ahead of them. You can't have too many moral victories anymore because you put yourself in a hole being 2-2 to start the season. But so they're going to have some signature wins. But if they keep playing like this, like, you can tell there's something with this team, and there's, you know, there's a reason to remain hope in this team. Like, Jaden Pierre needs to play better. David Punch needs to play better. In these type of games, like, when you have limited talent, the guys that are talented need to play better, and they know that. But Brock Harding's a player that they didn't have last year, and to get elevated performances from Micah Robinson and guys like that is encouraging. So. Michigan obviously has worries, but I do legitimately think that TCU's game plan was a big reason that Michigan, you know, had so many turnovers. And if they weren't all, you know, 7 feet skilled big men, then I think TCU would have had a shot to win. They did.
Skilled? I mean, is there any skill? Is he? I mean, like, he's a great player. Like, he's an athlete that, like, is great defensively and is, like, athletic and physical and, like, is a dominant force. But there's no skill on Michigan. I mean, their guard play was terrible. I mean, like, he has skill in the sense of, like, yes, he's a skilled basketball player, but, like, there is no ball handling. They need ball handling and they need, like, playmaking, and they just don't have it from anywhere. It, like, you know, we had this talk about the pure point guard thing before the season. It's like, You know, I don't think you need a pure point guard, but you need someone who can control an offense. You need someone who can make the right pass and who can put the ball on the floor. And it just seemed like Michigan didn't have that at all. Like, I don't understand. It doesn't even make sense to me how. And this is not even me trying to like shit on TCU. It's like TCU went in there and, like you said, should have won this game. They were in control of this game. If they hit two more shots down the stretch in that like pivotal last, like say like from that 7 minute to 3 minute mark where Michigan started kind of taking that lead, if TCU could have hit 1-3 in there, a couple layups, they could have easily won this game and it would have been a massive upset for Dixon and the Frogs. But like, when you look at it after the game from a macro level, Michigan scraped by a TCU team that shot under 40% from the field. Like, that is, they shot under 40% from the field. They shot like 28% from three. They only made 7 of them. Like, this was not some incredible offensive outburst from TCU to go, like, force almost an upset against a top 10 team. This was like, Michigan couldn't make a shot, and Michigan gave the ball away almost every time down the court. So, like, yes, I do agree that Yaxel is skilled, and, like, there's a lot of talent on this Michigan team, but they don't have anyone that can initiate. Like, I don't – I will say, like, having – I watched every second of this game dying for TCU to win. And, like, I have no faith in Michigan. Like – watching this game and like say what you will, and they go to overtime against Wake Forest earlier in the week, it's like I have no confidence in this Michigan team. I think there's some conversations to be had in the Big Ten. Are they a top 5 team in the Big Ten at this point? In my head, going into the conference play, like we'll see how it breaks down before that comes around. But like this was like you can't. I just like the whole time I was just like what. Why was this Michigan team a top 10 team? They can't create any offense. Elliot Cadeau, dude, is a non-factor. Like, he goes out there as 3 points, 6 turnovers. He has 1 assist. Roddy Gale was their lead assister. I don't think Roddy Gale, like, not even just because he transferred from Ohio State. I just don't think he is a great creator at all. He's not a great initiator at all.
He was by far their best one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's supposed to be your, like, third option on offense and a good defender. Like, to me, it just seems like Michigan isn't – they don't really – I don't even think Yaxel is a classic first option kind of guy on offense. He's really more of, like, a second option, just elite defensive kind of dude that, like, is going to be the best player on your team but might not be your number one offensive guy. And they just don't have any offensive juice. So, like – I think it's going to be a lot on Trey McKinney, the freshman guard's shoulders coming down the stretch. If he can step up into a role of being like, I'm the guard, I'm the creator, I'm the initiator for this Michigan team, and I'm going to be the reason that this team makes a run. Or if Elliot Cadeau can wake up and turn into a player that he has not proven at all that he is at any level, I don't know. I like, and also we should talk about, while we're on this game, I mean, imagine if the Michigan Wolverines had Brock Harding. You have TCU bias. I do not have TCU bias. Like, Brock Harding in this game was in control of everything. He is like a mini Braden Smith. Like, he literally does the right thing on every possession. Every time he had the ball in his hands in this game, I was like, TCU is going to get a good shot. TCU is going to get a good shot. And they did. They just kept missing them. Like, they just kept on missing good shots. And, like, Brock Harding is really good. Like, Brock Harding is an awesome player for TCU. And I don't know if it's going to come together for the Frogs this year. We'll see. I mean, I hope it does for your sake. But Brock Harding, man, I assume he stays in college one more year. And look out for him to be a serious guy both this season and next season, whether it's for the Frogs or elsewhere. But I'm really pumped on Brock Harding. And Micah Robinson looked great, I thought. We were talking about this a little off camera, but when he steps into his shots with confidence, he is a really, really good player. And if he can just keep that mentality, he's going to be good. Layla Vicious had some moments, which was great because he's been a little shaky through the first few games. It was good to see him kind of step up and make some tough shots. He's funny to watch. He's got, I don't know, he's funny to watch. His movement is really strange.
It's not smooth. It's like, he's got the build that's great of like being a 6'7" guy who can like shoot and stuff like that. But yeah, it's nothing about his game is smooth. It's frustrating because right when one person elevates their play, it's like Pierre and Punch were some of the best players early on and their play goes down. It's just, I don't know. It's one of those things where offense is going to be a struggle all year.
Do we want to have a Xavier Edmonds conversation here? The number one JUCO recruit in the country, right? I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
Goes to TCU, and with Malik Diallo down, I mean, he is kind of playing essentially your starting center. Where are you at with Edmonds? What do you see with him? What do you think for him coming down the season? Is he your starter?
Yeah, 100%. I actually really like Edmonds, and this isn't like I'm as high as Edmonds as anybody on this team.
Yeah.
He skill wise is, he may not be a better big man right now, but his skill wise is better than Malik Diallo.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's probably unfair to him that he's forced to play the five and kind of be this center that's so dependent on, because you come into this year, you expect to kind of be a backup guy who can be, you know, a spark off the bench and kind of transition well from JUCO to D1, and he's being asked to do a lot, and he was very good through the first three games, and it's unfortunate that he didn't play as well again on a primetime stage. But it was against, again, like 7-3 Mara and Yaxel's NBA player. And like this Michigan front court so well, and he's, again, being thrust into the system so early. So it's just a super
I was critical of him when we were talking, but he did not do a bad job on some of these guys really like looking back at it from the whole game perspective. I mean, he plays 20 minutes, 4 points, 3 rebounds. He goes 2 blocks, 3 steals, and he's a +6 on the game, which was TCU's second best plus minus. So I will I think he was better maybe than I gave him credit for, because I think he just had a couple of, let's say, like, it just seemed like maybe like low effort moments when they really needed like somebody to buckle down, and you know, that really just stood out to me. But I think I was probably a little harsh on him in that he's gonna be a really good player, and he has to be for TCU to make a run here, whether that means going to the tournament, which might be lofty expectations at this point, but I won't count them out if a top 10 team is coming into Fort Worth and is only going out with a 4-point win when TCU shoots like shit, then like they might be better than we think, and you can't write them off too soon.
Yeah, no. I got a chance to talk to X a little bit after a game and stuff like that, and he's just a super good dude that I think is meshing well with the culture here. Sounds so corny, but like in college, I feel like that kind of is a big thing where you can buy into what your coach is trying to do and play together. So that's what I love to see out of this team, because last season's TCU team, not to do too much TCU talk, but was, you know, the effort was a question at times and the contingency was a question and all that kind of stuff. But with the effort they showed against Michigan, at least early on in the year, that's not a question mark for me. And like you mentioned, like Brock's just a dog, and when you have a guy,
he's ridiculous.
When a guy brings that energy and is kind of your leader, I think that gravitates around him, and that was cool to see. So I'm excited to watch them play because they have a tough stretch with 4 of the next 5 games being against pretty Big Ten opponents.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But you know what? I mean, let's that gives them a chance to enter in a different type of conversation if they can rattle off a few wins against some better teams here.
Yeah, they're gonna.
So credit to Dixon for scheduling difficult, because that is what you give yourself a chance to do when you play these big games early. You give your chance to climb back up coming into conference play here in a month. Okay, let's move along. It was a good TCU Michigan conversation. Let's go over to Los Angeles, where Arizona plays UCLA in the Intuit Dome. So Arizona, obviously coming into this game off of a big win in opening night, kind of was the darling, let's say, of the first week of college basketball. Koa Pete was the freshman hero, and everyone was like, oh man, Arizona, they beat Florida. Florida's top three. Arizona kind of enters that top five conversation right off the bat. They go into LA and it doesn't look pretty. They end up getting a win. They get a 4-point win here. Koa Pete does not play well. It's really more Dell'Orso, Bradley, who lead the way for Arizona. Nick, what did you see here with Arizona versus UCLA?
Yeah, you knew I was super high on this Arizona team coming into the year. And,
yeah.
And it's awesome because they've shown in the first 2 weeks that they can win in multiple ways, where, you know, your freshman in Burries and Koa Pete, like you mentioned, is kind of taking all the headlines. Like, they were off this game. And then they were picked up by a guy in Jane Bradley who's taking that next step and is really turning into an amazing guard. And like you mentioned, Deli off the bench is he's a baller. And he, coming over from Campbell last season, like, he was a highly touted guy at the portal. I studied him a little bit because he took a visit to TCU. But he was the guy at Campbell. I think he dropped close to 20 a game there.
Yeah, 20 a game.
Yeah, he's just a guy who can give that spark off the bench. And he did that here, where a lot of these guys, you know, like Crevis and Bradley and Deli and Awaka, like, they were there last year, and they've taken the next step where, like, yeah, Pete's still the guy, and Burries is still going to be, you know, up there as well with being the 2 5-star freshmen that they got. But the contingency of the supporting cast, I think, is what really sold me coming into the year to go along with the star power, where they're more dependable. And, yeah, Arizona's just a really damn good team, and I think that's super exciting.
And then UCLA, obviously, early on in the season, they kind of struggle a little bit with Eastern Washington. They only win by 6 points. Pepperdine, they only win by 11. And I think there was kind of some question about, is UCLA who we thought? Mick Cronin obviously fired himself, as we know. Donovan Dent maybe hadn't had his big night yet. And coming into this game, he doesn't necessarily have an incredible night. I mean, 11 points, 8 assists. He was obviously a great point guard and played great. But Bilodeau, 19 points on 7 of 10, 3 of 4 from 3. They shot great. They shot over 50% from 3 as a team on the game. It seemed like maybe UCLA was not that far from Arizona's level, despite the fact that they had struggled a little in these bye games. But, Nick, what did you see from UCLA that you liked? What did you see that maybe you didn't like so much?
Yeah, it's a lot of similar to last year's UCLA team, where it seemed like they didn't really have, like, a... Like, Dent's supposed to be the guy, and he was one of the biggest transfers in the portal, and he just hasn't lived up to that expectation. And the problem is that with a lot of these guys coming back who aren't these stars, like, it's a thing that a much smaller scale with Edmonds, but, like, it's a similar situation where, like, you have to be that guy to give them a chance. They're going to be good, but there's just no depth to this team. They really run like 6 deep consistently, and, like, Trent Perry's a guy who's a very highly, I think, flipped from USC to UCLA last minute. A 5-star last season, it was supposed to be big time to take the next step. He hasn't really done that so far. And then guys like Sky Clark and Daly, who you know, are supposed to be good supporting cast. Like, it's they're just missing that flash and that spark for me. Like, it was good that they were competitive in this game, but being in, you know, LA, like, that's basically a home game for them. Like, you should expect to win that one.
Yeah.
Against, you know, a young Arizona team, as high as a lot of people are on them, like, you're still, like, Dents had so much experience, and they still retain a decent amount. So, yeah, they have a lot to figure out. I'm not going to say they're not going to be good, but a big story of early in college basketball has been the strength of the Big Ten. And as you stack up UCLA against a lot of these top teams, like, they're not even close to being in that elite category. And so they got to figure that out fast.
Yeah, I think the Big Ten's interesting. We'll talk about this more. But it's kind of like a lot. I mean, because it's the same way I feel about Michigan, where it's like Michigan and UCLA were touted as the two kind of next teams after, or say the Purdue, I'm sorry, Purdue, Michigan, and Illinois were obviously like the top three, Purdue being one, and then UCLA was kind of that next one. And then it seems like UCLA and Michigan might not be to that standard. Illinois might be above that standard. And then you got like Indiana has looked great, and Ohio State has looked great, who obviously we'll get to. Iowa's been good. Like, there could be a surge from that kind of next group in the Big Ten that I think the conference is going to be more competitive than we thought coming in, because Wisconsin's looked great too. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there, because UCLA is, I think if they would have been able to pull this game out, if we both feel differently about it, obviously there's only a 4-point loss, but like you said, it's kind of at home, and you came into the season with a lot of expectations, and Coa Pete was bad, and they still beat you at home. And yeah, they definitely, like, the ending of the game, they took over for sure. Okay, let's move on to what I think was probably the game of the weekend. BYU-UConn. Final score, BYU 84, UConn 86. I think that's a little bit closer than it actually was at the end of the game.
But, like, the comeback.
Yeah,
was
no. Out, like, yeah, the comeback was like the comeback was.
Yeah, it wasn't like garbage time or anything.
Definitely no. I don't think I'm just like they literally hit a buzzer beater. It was like what I was saying. Like, but AJ DeBanta is fucking awesome. Like that was the. I know UConn won, and obviously we'll talk about UConn. We'll talk about Demery. It was kind of his big breakout game. Terrace Reed has been amazing. Caravan is still exactly who we thought he was, if not better. But man, AJ DeBanta just drilling these contested mid-range jumpers down the stretch. He's got that. You know who he shoots like Kawhi, where it's like just those long arms, like you just can't stop his shot because he's got these long arms. He gets the ball up so high, and he's just drilling these tough jumpers in your face over and over and over. He's getting to the rim at will. It was awesome watching this game. I went back and watched because that was obviously Ohio State was playing UCLA in football, but this was an electric performance for DeBanta, and I'd say his come out to the world, like, I'm here. You know, BYU is a force to be reckoned with, because let's not forget, this game's in Boston. It's pretty much a home game for UConn. I think they were favored by over 5 points. So this was a good game for both squads. But, Nick, what did you see from the losing team, BYU, and what do you think coming out of this game for them?
Yeah, like you mentioned, DeBanta was a story. He's a guy, obviously, from Brockton, Mass. So playing in Boston, yeah. He had a ton of family there, and a little homecoming for him, and so yeah, it was cool to see him live up, and it didn't start as smooth sailing for him. And
no,
I think one of the big things when you're a freshman is, like, he has all the skill in the world. You knew he was a tough shot maker. Like, you knew he could hit those contested mid rangers and get his. But the poise when it wasn't going well was the big thing for me. He stayed in it. BYU went down big early, obviously, to a very good UConn team. And he was able to stay in the game and get his. And when you look at this BYU team as a whole, like, Kennard Davis obviously out with the DUI situation. And who knows, like, what's going to come of that. And then also Kaba Keita going out early in the game. He basically, you know, pretty much didn't play the whole game with the injury. So you're missing your best big man, and you're missing probably your best defender. And they, you know, lost a pretty much road game against one of the best teams in the nation by two. So I think if they are able to get Davis back and who knows with Cade, like this team could be like the ceiling is
It's unreal.
so high. Yeah, that's my takeaway, and it's one of those things where this is one of those games where I think at least me personally bought stock in both teams. Like I was also impressed with UConn. The ability to have three
Of
20-point
course.
scorers is unbelievable, and Caravan and Silas and Reed, and they're still missing some guys too. Like these are two really, really, really good teams that I think could very well be in contention for Final Four and national championship
Definitely.
conversations if they're both, healthy and playing at their best. So yeah, it's just a very high-level basketball game, and yeah, to Bansa, like it's. This whole freshman class is unbelievable, and that's probably the biggest story of this college basketball season so far. But it's funny when you have like guys like Pete and like Amen and all these guys making headlines, and then like it almost is like forgotten about the star guys too. Like we saw Boozer go crazy,
Totally.
and obviously Darren Peterson has an injury situation, which sucks. But
It's a
DeBanza
bummer.
is unreal, so. Yeah, both teams.
DeBanta is just ridiculous. From the UConn side, Terrace Reed is, I mean, through three games, and obviously we take those stats with a grain of salt, two bye games and then BYU, but he's pretty much been scoring 20 points. He's pretty much been a 20-point double-double with multiple blocks every single game. And, like, that is a guy that's in contention for player of the year come the end of the year. And Terrace Reed has never quite been that level of guy, obviously, but we're seeing it this year. And, man, he was awesome in this game. This was kind of the Silas Demery, I think, breaking out party alongside. Alongside the DeBanta coming out party, where he goes off for 21, 5, and 7. I mean, he is awesome. He's fun to watch run around with the hair going all over the place. And no, this UConn team is, I mean, it's just like if you thought after last season, like, oh, if you were one of the idiots like me that thought after last season, like, oh, maybe you people are overhyping Dan Hurley, overhyping UConn, like, maybe those 2 years were a flash in the pan and whatever. Like, yeah, they weren't. They're going to be a national championship contender this year. They're going to be a Final Four contender this year. And I think I'm already, I mean, obviously, this is completely based on the results from the first couple of weeks, but you definitely got to feel like they are the favorite in the Big East at the moment with how well they have played. They've completely dominated all their bye games, and now they've beat a top 10 team in Boston. So yeah, UConn's awesome. They're up to number three in the country. BYU is still top 10. And then we'll push to Sunday. Can we talk about Notre Dame, Ohio State, Nick?
Let's do it.
Obviously not, maybe not the premier top 10 matchup that you get out of a UConn BYU, but it was a standalone non-con or a standalone power conference game, as John Rothstein likes to say. Notre Dame Fighting Irish, great offense. Marcus Burton, Brennan Shrewsbury, two of the best guards in the ACC, come into Columbus looking to take down a 3-0 Ohio State team, and guess what? They couldn't do it. As hard as Ohio State tried to lose that game, Christoph Tilly saves the day with a bucket with 15 seconds to go. Christoph Tilly then clamps up on Marcus Burton, and he comes down the floor. And man, this Ohio State team is now 4-0 with a win over Notre Dame, and I'm starting to get excited, Nick. Did you have any thoughts coming out of this game about the Buckeyes or the Fighting Irish?
I mean, Bruce Thornton again continues to be, one of the best players in the nation. Like, I remember I said it preseason that he was one of the best guards in the Big Ten and in the country, to be honest. And he's a real All-American contender, and he's being even above that. Like, he's a Player of the Year contender at this point with how lethal they are. And it was a different style of game that Ohio State obviously had to play. Being that, I guess it's their first power conference team they played too, but the last possession was interesting to me when you are struggling on offense for the majority of the game, and Micah Shrewsbury as a coach is almost known for his, you know, drawing up plays and getting guys looks out of timeouts, and he just chose not to call a timeout.
Yeah. I think he went home. How many timeouts did they have? Multiple they left with, right? Like, yeah. it was the most absurdly stupid decision of all time.
Yeah. And I just watched the highlight. Like, I didn't watch the game flow, so obviously you know more than me, but that seemed very dumb for that position, especially with the game Byrne was having where he wasn't really seeming to get in a rhythm outside of getting
No, he was bad. So.
You got to be able to win ugly, and they did this game again. Like, learning how to win in different ways, I think is great. And Thornton just continuing to put together an unbelievable season. Like, he has unreal stats right now, and his shot making is
awesome.
Insane. So, they have their guys with him and Tilly really having a good 1-2 punch going right now, and obviously you still have Mobley, who's a lethal shooter as well. It's a good thing going right now, and the ability to win different is big, and I think you have to throw Ohio State in a deep Big Ten, but they're right there, like probably in that second to bottom first tier type of team.
Yeah. They've been a lot of fun to watch. I've been at every game so far. I'd say biggest takeaway for this squad, Bruce Thornton is all American, and like you said, a National Player of the Year candidate probably. Like, I'll tell you what the biggest difference is for him this year is he is so confident from three, and he is just like taking threes when he gets them, and he's drilling them, and like, he is just such an elite shooter. It's really absurd how quality of a shot maker he is. And then Christoph Tilly, man, Ohio State fans, obviously this is no one, it's probably not exactly Ohio State basketball podcast, but anyone who's been paying attention for the last few years has known, like, Ohio State hasn't really had a center since, like almost 5-6 years ago. Like, it was a lot of EJ Liddell starting at the five last time Ohio State was good. It was Devin Royal starting at the five last year down the stretch, which is just not acceptable. And, you bring in a guy like even Yvonne, and Yvonne is just a complete non-factor for Ohio State. He's like the hands made of rocks. Like, he can't contribute. So he was kind of nothing for them last year, and he looks to be nothing again. But Christoph Tilly is amazing, and he is so capable with the ball in his hands. He's so capable putting the ball on the floor. Like, even that game winner that he had, it's not just like he got the ball at the rim and put it up. It's like he got the ball on the move, over his head, one dribble, finishes through contact. He has been a revelation for Ohio State. He's been their second best player. And him and Thornton, I mean, Devin Royal didn't have his best game, but he's coming back from an injury, so I'm not going to hold it against him because he's been great for us so far. If Mobley's hitting his shots, man, this team's good. The depth is going to be a real problem down the stretch here. I mean, Gabe Cupps off the bench for Ohio State has been great on defense and very high energy and very intense, which is super important, and it's a great guy to have off your bench. But the problem is they don't have anyone that can score the ball past the starting five, so I'm a little worried about that. But I'm gonna give myself license to be optimistic. We're 4-0. This was a, say what you will about Notre Dame, I mean, they're not UConn obviously, but like, this is a real test. Like, that's a team that could go to the tournament theoretically, and like as we know, any team could. But that's a real power conference team with some real top end talent in Burton and Shrewsbury. And like, Shrewsbury took 7 shots in this game. Like, he was not getting what he wanted. Burton went 3 of 14 from the field. Gabe Cupps had Marcus Burton in hell. Like, it was legit impressive how well he was guarding him. So yeah, I'm pumped. It was a lot of fun to watch. And also, it was not a perfect game for Ohio State either. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, their offense was not great. And like, down the stretch, they didn't score a point for the last 3 minutes up to the point, last 4 minutes up to the point where Tilly scored the game winner. So like, that's unacceptable. And the offense has to be better. And a lot of guys need to step up other than Thornton and Tilly. But I'm going to let myself be excited here on the pod. And it's looking good for Ohio State. I'm excited about Ohio State. All right, let's push on to another power conference matchup, but maybe a little higher stakes here with Houston going down to Auburn, narrowly escaping with a win after an Auburn first couple games where we question, are they even does going to maybe be like a tournament team down the stretch? Like, Nick, what do you think here with Auburn almost beating Houston?
Yeah, I'm not that low on this Auburn team after that performance. Like, Keyshawn Hall's that guy, and I listened to the pod with you and Bryce the other day, and you guys were almost burying Auburn. I was like, all right, maybe we're jumping the gun a little too much. like, it's still a pretty damn good team, and they were still 3-0 at the time. But yeah, it's Keyshawn Hall is one of the best players in the Big 12. Kevin Overton, one of those players in the Big 12. Like, Tahad Pettiford hasn't gotten off to the start that, you know, we all thought he would. But he's just dropped 15 points against a Houston defense. It's unbelievable. So to be competitive in this game, I think, is massive. Obviously, it's basically a home game being in Birmingham. Great arena. I've been there for a couple of games at Legacy Arena. had some great memories there. Yeah, for Houston, though, like, it's the year of the freshman again, where Kingston Flemings and Chris Sinek, they were the best players on the court this game. And
yeah,
we're the two five-star freshmen coming in. And it's to do that in a Kelvin Sampson system, too, where it's a lot of development and a lot of wait your turn. Like, it just goes to show just how good these guys are. They can come right away and kind of beat the two guys where – like Miles Juzan and Emmanuel Sharp and JoJo Tugler are playing around him, which is crazy. And they were as good as advertised. So, you're going to probably get better play with, like, Juzan's always been a second half type of player, like, in season one. Sure. He'll get better as he goes. So, Houston by stock and Auburn better than I thought they were preseason. Again, to lose by one on technically a neutral. And really, like, Auburn should have won this game. Like, they missed 12 free throws. Yeah. Like, if they hit two more of those, that's a win. So that's
– totally.
I don't know. I guess Houston's defense is a little bit of figuring out to be able to let, you know, Keyshawn Hall do that to him. But and I guess not to foul, but –
Keyshawn Hall is just that guy, though. I don't know if it's like, he is so legit. Like, UCF was obviously not that great last season, but that doesn't mean that he wasn't a great player. And also is sometimes I think we bury guys who, like, put up big numbers on bad teams. And I did this a little bit with Stojakovic coming into the season, who's been awesome so far. And, like, so I'll take a step back and I'll say, like, yeah, you know, just because you weren't on a winning team doesn't mean you're not a winning player. So, like, good for him. He looks awesome. I mean, he's playing absurdly well. He's probably been one of the best players in the country so far this season. He's shooting, like, 25 points a game on 50-50-90. So, I obviously don't think that's going to last, but he's been awesome. Big loss for Auburn. Obviously, only losing by one to Houston in this one. Big loss. Huge loss. Yeah, I actually think I learned more about Auburn in this one. No. Purdue. Akron goes to Purdue. I picked that as, like, a sneaky upset on the last two pods, and obviously it didn't happen. But, you know, sometimes you just got to shoot while you got to fire one.
Yeah, I mean, just in case. Shooting your shot on a 20-point spread or something like that.
19,
like,
it
is what it is. If it happened, a no loss.
They technically they did cover, so.
It's a no-loss situation.
It is a no-loss situation.
Because it's like...
And it's like, can you imagine it actually happened?
It's no risk, all reward.
Exactly. And that's what we do here at the Mid-Range. We're a big no-risk, high-reward podcast over here. All right, Nick, let's move on from the games that have happened, unless there's anything specific you want to talk about. give you the opportunity.
I mean, not really. The only other big, I guess, NC State last night, or we can talk Florida Miami, but I mean, none of those like directly.
Oh yeah, Florida Miami. Yeah, I thought Miami would give them a better fight, honestly. Florida just
kind of
killed them.
A big get back, like, hey, reminder, we're still the Natty champs type of game.
For sure.
But yeah, it scares me because TCU plays them in a couple weeks, and it's again like
plays Florida.
Yeah, like you're playing the you know, you just played in the Michigan front court, and you're going against like maybe the only other front court that's better. So that should be fun for us. But like Florida, even though they won this game by 14, I was higher on Miami too. I thought they'd give them a better shot, but. Xavier Lee and Boogie Flant still aren't.
I was just gonna say that it is like kind of insane how bad they've been. Both of them have been so bad.
And specifically Lee, like maybe the jump from Princeton to Florida is a little bit bigger than we took. But
yeah, I mean, maybe same for Dent too, because like obviously everyone was just so ready to crown him, including me. Like you're like maybe it's hard to go from the Mountain West or whatever. I think
it sucks though because you just saw. But then again, you take like Walter Clayton and Will Richard and Elijah Martin, who all came from small majors and they did it effortlessly. So I think it's such a case by case basis with guys.
That's why it's such a ridiculous sport, because it's just you could do the exact same process 100 different times and it's going to be a completely different result. Like,
and it's so different.
Because,
so
there's no reason.
Related. Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely.
It's funny.
But maybe maybe TCU can challenge like similarly to how they challenged Michigan.
They're a very similar team to Michigan.
I'm just saying. But this will be at Florida, right?
No, this is neutral. This is in San Diego.
ATO or whatever.
Rated Children's. It's the Feast Week tournament.
Nice.
It's them and the winner.
For Feast Week. I'm definitely ready to have some awesome games on all the time.
Yeah, we're a week away.
College, I fucking love college basketball, man. It's so awesome. All right. Let's power forward. We hit our kind of review stuff. Let's go into the games for this week. A few big ones. Tonight, because I am going to post this podcast today, so we'll still talk about it.
Champions Classic.
Michigan State, who obviously we know won the championship super recently.
Yeah,
so
with a lot of teams. These teams have not won a lot of championships in a while. Like Kansas is the most recent one. Kentucky, maybe we should refresh some of these teams. But here we are.
It is what it is. I mean, Michigan State, Kentucky. Where are these games at? Oh, at MSG,
MSG.
So we got Kentucky is favored in this one, but Michigan State is obviously coming off a big win against Arkansas. Kentucky's coming off a loss against Louisville. Kentucky's still ranked higher. Nick, what do you see here with Michigan, UK tonight at 6:30 p.m.?
Michigan State, UK?
Yeah. State, Michigan.
It's one of those things where I don't love either of these teams early on in the year. Like, I think Kentucky's still working through injury, and like Lowe hasn't been as good, and they're still waiting for JQ to come back. And
Lowe
so
sucks.
I don't love that. But then Michigan State, it's like they've danced around, and I don't know how much a win over Arkansas is worth at this point. I'm probably going to take the more expensive roster and the talent with Kentucky to pull this up pretty convincingly. Because they should have enough depth, and Owe should be able to play better. And then
he sucks too.
For Kansas and Duke, like it's one of those things where it's DP is out.
It's a
for
bummer.
The foreseeable future with the hamstring, and as we've talked about over and over again, their reliance on him, like he's the entire team in Duke. With Boozer's play of late, is like they're gonna roll in that game.
If Peterson misses five games, this is gonna be real bad for Kansas.
You,
I mean, they like
Like it's he very
Yeah.
well
You got to
could.
be careful. Yeah, Kansas should be like quaking a little bit, like, oh shit. Like we're gonna be in a tough spot here, cause I will say, if DP was playing tonight, I would have had a little spiel for why I think that they might have a better chance than you think, but there's just no point in even trying to act like there's like and then now I'm sure they'll win. But yeah, Duke's probably gonna kill Kansas tonight, I think. And I do think Kentucky probably wins. It's gonna be an ugly game. And Kentucky, both these teams are just gross. Kentucky's gross. Like that Jalen Lowe is just gross. Like he is just not a fun to watch for me. Like watching him play is just like the most like inefficient, like ugly basketball, like. And seeing him being across the floor from Mychal Brown, who also got injured, I think, in that game was like, this is like the most beautiful basketball I've ever seen. And then the other guy's just like constantly doing like the last thing I want him to do. And
They almost have
yeah, I
too
don't know
many
about
guys.
Kentucky. What?
I said they almost have too many guys where it's like,
Yeah.
yes, they have the most expensive roster, but like if that roster is not going to guys you fit, and again, this is
Right.
probably an overreaction. Like they lost one game at Louisville, and
Yeah.
they'll probably be Michigan State.
We're not
But
burying
yeah, the,
Kentucky. It's
yeah,
just.
no, I'm just, but yeah, it's valid concerns that, when you have too many guys, I mean, you might not have one at all. And I guess Oway's kind of the guy, but and I guess wait and see until JQ comes back to
Yeah.
really give a full judgment of this team. But yeah, nothing has kind of blown me away.
Yeah, Oway might be the guy, or he might be a complete non-factor because he has not been great this year either. I don't know. I'm not burying Kentucky. I think they're probably a top 15 team, and they're probably still going to compete in the SEC. But it's like, I can tell you what I have learned about Kentucky is that I'm not going to be watching them unless they're playing Michigan. So this game is going to suck so bad. Like, there's no way this game is going to be fun to watch. This is just a
Jam the
guaranteed
carpet.
gross, yeah, just disgusting. It's gonna be like 60-62, or yeah, I'm not looking forward to this. But I will be watching, and then I will watch Kansas Duke after, and I'm sure Kansas will go off. But let's move past that disgusting matchup, and let's go to something that's a couple games that are just gonna be damn fun to watch. You got Arizona, UConn playing in Connecticut. Wildcats 4-0, the Huskies 4-0. It's a top four matchup. I'm so excited for this one, Nick. What do you think here? How do you see this game going?
As high of a, as high as I've been on UConn, I think the true road environment here, which is the first like again true road environment that these freshmen of Arizona have ever played in, and Dan
Yeah.
Hurley's coaching with a lot of guys he's familiar with, like that it's that scares me to be honest, and
Yeah.
I don't trust Dely
So as high as
or
you are on Arizona, you mean?
I think UConn wins
Yeah.
by a decent margin. I don't want to say double
Ooh.
digits, but like, semi-convincingly. I just think UConn's at this moment in time a better team, which is probably unfair because Zona's beaten, the reigning national championship
Yeah.
and one of the biggest blue bloods in the country in a semi-away game. But I'm really bought into this UConn team. I think even more.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just trust her. I feel like Hurley's got that in him right now, and he's kind of on demon mode where, he'd taken it out on UMass Lowell, beating them by what 63 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like it's, they're on a different level right
Yeah.
now.
They're pissed. He's coaching pissed, and they look awesome. Did you see his interview with Goodman after the game?
Yes, it was great. They broke the Cold
Yeah,
War.
that was
Broke the
pretty
Cold War.
awesome.
Goodman
Yeah,
on the way
I will
home.
say,
Goodman's gonna be in
I'll
stores too for this
what'd you
game.
say?
Goodman's gonna be
Oh,
in
is
stores
he?
for this game too, so they might do another interview.
Perfect. I can't wait. Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course. I mean, I think like you kind of have to pick UConn here. It's at home, and Arizona has obviously, like you said, beat the reigning champ, beat another top 20, top 15 team away from home. But I think this is probably where their strong start runs into a stronger start. And, like, you know, this is, there's no shame in losing to UConn in Connecticut. And there's a lot of credit if you go in there and you win, then this Arizona team deserves to be talked about, like really.
Like
right there with Purdue. If they win this game, I will say that right now. And if they, it's gonna be an awesome game. I'm really pumped for that one. And then I'm almost even more excited for the game that comes after it, which is gonna be just a lot of baskets and a lot of fun. Alabama, Illinois at the United Center, so in Chicago. So essentially a home game for Illinois, but technically not in Champaign. Semi-home game for Illinois, Alabama going to town. I'm going to just say right now, Nick, I know Illinois got a big win over Tech. I know Alabama lost to Purdue. But I'm going to take the Crimson Tide in this one in Chicago. I think LeBaron Filon is going to be firing on all cylinders, coming off a tough game against Purdue. I think Illinois is not a particularly strong defense that you need to focus your efforts on. And I think he's going to be able to dice them up. And if they want to play, I think Alabama can play their game. And I think this game's going to end 100-90, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But I'm going to take Alabama in this one.
Here's the thing, though. Like, Illinois can play that game, too, where their offense is just as good, if almost better.
Totally.
And, I mean, this is obviously a massive factor, but Tomislav Ivicic could be back. I think he's a game-time decision. And I would honestly expect him to play with this type of game. And I think Illinois is just a better team than Bama as of right now, just going through less transition. I think that being at relatively home is better. And as much as I love Filon and what Bama can do, again, I think Illinois wins semi-convincingly. Because Tomislav. And also, Kylan Boswell is one of the most underrated guards in the country. Like, the step he's taken this year to kind of command
Let
that
him
team
know.
And get him going, Kylan Boswell, legit. And I don't want to say any crazy takes, but
crazy take. Well, what would you? Okay. What would you say if you were to drop a crazy
second
take?
Second best guard in the conference, but then I don't know if I believed it.
Let's say third.
Yeah, Thornton, BT, KB.
Thornton's got to be number two at this point.
Yeah. But Kyle Boswell's a stud, where he's like a star now, and if he can play.
Yeah. No, he's awesome. Star he was awesome in that game against Tech, for sure.
Yeah.
Tech, Nick, are you feeling a little validated with them already having taken an L? And
yeah,
JT Toppin drops 35 points and they lose? Like, that's pretty much exactly what you said.
Exactly. Like, him and Christian Anderson are their team, and they need, like, a Lawan Watts to step up. But even he, like, for WCC watchers, he wasn't that great last year. Like, I don't know. It really is just those two guys. And I feel like as much as everybody knows Toppin and Anderson, like, they're going to get theirs, but it's not going to matter. Like, you saw what D5 did in NC State's win at VCU yesterday. Like, D5. I'm telling you, like, there's something different about players from the Bay Area where it's like they have a different grit to them and out the mud
for sure.
Vibe.
Well, just like us.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, no one breeds NBA talent like the Bay Area does. And I think Darren Williams is right there. And, he was by far, like, I mean, he wasn't, because Toppin was Big 12 Player of the Year and really good. But he was probably their most important player last year, like, because he handled the ball and kind of facilitated all that kind of stuff. And, like, that's not even a bit, because he's a Bay guy. Like, he was legitimately.
No, I know. I just love the he's the most, he's not the best player, but he's the most important player. It just is like cracks me up, like, generally.
Okay, You know, he actually was the best player last year.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, there you go. Legitimately was. Like, he was the engine that drove that team. Like, Toppin has, you know those guys in the league that have, like, a ton of rebounds, and you're like, I don't even know, like, how the hell they got those. Like, that's Toppin, where he's great at, like, kind of cleaning up and you know, solid post moves. But, like, he's not this, like, superstar, like, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to bed at 8 p.m. before you got to guard Steph Curry. You're going to get to bed at 8 p.m. before you're going to
bed. I saw this clip. I just saw that clip.
You're having a couple glasses of red wine before you. Like, you can go out before you play Jason Toppin. He's not shivering with that quality. Like, again, good
player. Nick. You're going hard. We're going to have to clip that.
That's how I genuinely feel, though. Like, he's amazing, but, like, not maybe as amazing as you might think, where it's
he's like a, the game ends, and it's like, holy shit, he had 30 and 10. I didn't even
realize. Exactly. He's that guy. He'll get all, like, solid post moves, great at finishing, great inside, but, like, you're not like, oh, my God, I got to guard JT Toppin.
No, a couple glasses of red wine.
Steak,
like, dinner.
Okay, be honest. If you're guarding Deron Williams, you're on a road trip. You're in a beautiful
room. Oh, I'd be in the hotel. I'd be probably asleep by 8 p.m.
Yeah, likely. You're taking melatonin. Yeah. You're having warm tea. You're up early, you know, grinding tape. Like, you got Toppin, you know. You're enjoying the city.
Yeah. If you got Toppin, you might have a girl over that night. You know, you're having a good time.
And then you can still be fine.
I love that. And just to be clear, let's look at JT Toppin's stats on the
year.
That's
why
we're talking about.
That's my point.
24, 12, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block on 56% shooting. But it's not the same as
D5. You defend Tech like this year, where it's you're gonna let Toppin get his, and you're gonna be fine.
That actually is true. Yeah. you are right. Like
a lot of NBA games where it's like,
yeah,
it's a bad example to use Jokic, but like Jokic is gonna get his, I guess, because the Nuggets are a good team. But like on those, like when Luka's on a bad team, like. When you're defending the Lakers, like Luke
is well, like Cam Thomas is like a good example.
Yes,
like Cam Thomas will go
like
out there and have 40 points. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably use a big man as an example, but you know what I mean, where it's like you're fine if he drops 30 because it's, you don't know, it's what he's going to do.
Now you just got me ruminating. Well, here's a good one, Sabonis. It's like Sabonis.
Yes. That's kind of how
they
work
on that note.
That series.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, actually, Sabonis is like terrible. I mean, he's like dog shit. So
a little like Wemby. Like Draymond did a great job on Wemby the other night, and Wemby still had his. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, like that dunk, like that dunk video. Like that basket didn't.
It didn't count.
Like this viral clip, and everyone's like making fun of Draymond. It's like. There's plenty of ways to make fun of Draymond on baskets that actually counted. You don't pick the one that didn't count. Like
everyone's saying, like alpha Draymond in that situation because it's a clip-based league. Like if you watch the game, Draymond did a very good job on. Wemby had 8 turnovers that one game against him.
Yeah,
like it's.
Yeah.
I don't know. He did. It's narratives these days, man. Clip-based league.
And I don't. And you gotta ask. You gotta ask. It's like. Why does everyone hate Draymond, too? It's not like he ever did anything wrong.
Yeah. It's not like he's... Never done anything wrong.
Never done anything wrong. Squeaky clean record. All right. Well, that's the pod. Nick, thank you for joining me today. This is like an early morning pod for us. 2 p.m. We're done. I'm going to put it out immediately. And, you know, make sure to listen to it before... before Duke starts or what before Michigan State in 3 hours. Or just skip that part either way, but I appreciate everybody who listened. Obviously the Mid-Range CBB on all socials, Jake, why is Jacob shout 04 on X for me? Shout out to WCC.
Best WCC of all time. Got better without BYU.
I don't know. 2019.
Gonzaga's number one in KenPom.
I know. Gonzaga. Oh, we should talk about. We should do a whole episode about Gonzaga because they're fucking awesome.
let's. We need a WCC episode because, like, unbiasedly, Gales are really good too.
Santa Clara was really good.
Santa Clara is very good. Like,
we should do a whole episode just on Santa Clara.
genuinely, like, I mean, they're kind of
cheating. Pretty system, great story
from they're getting all the 25-year-old pros, but they are good.
Yeah, but they're pumping out even, NBA like, guys like, on the side too.
Yeah, the bottom is good. Like you mentioned, Pepperdine played UCLA close, and nobody probably cares about the WCC, but like LMU's decent. Like you saw Stan Johnson hitting the running man in the locker room after the game. Like vibes are high there. It's like you see the clip.
Yeah. I did not see the clip. You gotta send me that one over.
Yeah, just look up LMU basketball. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, WCC that. Legitimately top. Are they better than the Big East? Do you want to have that conversation another day?
I mean, the Big East might be bad. Like Marquette might suck. I mean, Georgetown's decent. At least, I guess they're kind of switching out Georgetown with, but Xavier is terrible. Villanova's not that great. Like, it's not looking great. Providence sucks. It's not great for the Big East.
Thing after every game, I thought it was just the running man.
All right,
yeah, LMU's got good vibes.
Now I want to see it. Now I do want to see it.
Celebration every game. like the WCC, like I don't think we're ready right now. I don't think we're ready right now, but there's a conversation to be had whether the WCC is a better conference this year than the Big East.
On that note, thank you everybody so much for listening. Please subscribe to the Midrange. I love you all very much. Nick, thank you for joining me. Adios.